Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. It's Wednesday, June 27th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. We can do it together. Just visit norml.org to get involved with legalization today. We're going to have a different Wednesday show for you this week, folks. Usually on Wednesday, we feature Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our cannabis science segment. Instead, Mitch is going to join us tomorrow here on the Audio Stash for a very special program. We're going to speak with Mitch and a number of other medical professionals about a very important new piece of medical research that was just released this week. This new research is a human clinical trial dealing with the effectiveness of smoked marijuana on a variety of medical conditions. Now, clinical trials with smoked marijuana are very rare, so this is a very important piece of data. Again, we're going to discuss this in depth in tomorrow's Audio Stash, so make sure to tune in tomorrow as well. Lucky for us, we just got the digital audio tapes in from Aspen's legal seminars that took place earlier this month in the very beautiful and very marijuana-friendly city of Aspen, Colorado. Normal's second annual Aspen Legal Seminar was of particular success and of note because it wasn't just lawyers. It was open to the public as well. Tommy Chong, who we're going to interview tonight about his experience out there in Aspen, was giving the keynote address out there. And there was also a social event at Hunter S. Thompson's Owl Creek Ranch hosted by his wife, Anita Thompson. So today we're going to hear one of those presentations from Aspen's Legal Seminar. We're going to hear Hal Haddon. Hal is really one of the stars of the criminal defense lawyers community out there, very well known amongst the legal circle out there, and well known probably to a lot of you out there. He has a lot of high-profile clients, as you'll hear in his introduction as well. Hal's talk today has to do with drug courts, and he answers a couple of questions from the audience as well. I found this talk particularly compelling, and I'm sure you will too. Again, this is lawyer Hal Haddon at the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar earlier this month, again in the beautiful and marijuana-friendly city of Aspen, Colorado. We're going to have a special Aspen Legal Seminar page with most of the talks given out there. And again, we're going to speak with Tommy Chong later in the week right here on the Audio Stash about his experience hanging out with the Normal lawyers there. Here's Hal Haddon in Aspen.
Let me remind all you flatlanders to keep drinking water because we're at a pretty high altitude here and you will not feel well if you don't drink water. And as my doctor lectured me last week, caffeine and alcohol do not count. So drink something else. Anyway, let me get going with our speakers. As a kind of a bunch of I'm not worthy moments here today, and this is one of them. I'd like to introduce arguably one of the greatest criminal defense attorneys we have in Colorado, if not the country. He at one point acted as Gary Hart's campaign manager. He's represented the Ramseys, and he is famous for also representing Kobe Bryant and is hopefully working towards bringing him to the Nuggets as we speak. He's also probably one of five people here today who are going to claim to have been Hunter's attorney. But and the best of all, he throws, his firm throws the greatest Christmas party for the criminal defense bar. Let me introduce Hal Haddon. Please.
Thank you, Warren. I've got the water problem too. And I live at this altitude, but I was one of Hunter Thompson's lawyers. I consider myself to be the best one. Reason being that my cross-examination in Hunter's sex, drugs, and explosives case was taken on the road by Jerry Goldstein, who claimed it for his own. If Jerry's here, I'd like him to defend that. I'm really glad that there are a lot of people here who are non-lawyers as well as lawyers, because what I want to talk about today is not the sexy stuff that encompasses the Bryant case, the Ramsey case, Hunter's cases, and others. I want to talk about drug courts. And the reason that I'm interested in this subject is sort of serendipity. I sit on the ABA Criminal Justice Standards Council, and the ABA has decided in the last 12 months that the standards need to be written, criminal justice standards, for drug and specialty courts and for diversion. And so I also sit on that committee, and we are right now in the process of drafting standards for drug courts, assuming their necessity. And that's an assumption that I want to challenge and discuss a little bit with you, especially given your focus on decriminalization and rationalization of drug laws, because I think in some ways the rise and institutionalization of drug courts may well be inimical to decriminalization and to more rational sentencing, straight line sentencing in drug cases. But that's the reason I decided I wanted to talk to this group today. In addition to that motivation, as many of you, all of you from Colorado know, Denver has had a very rocky experience with drug courts. Denver had one of the first drug courts established in 1994, primarily with federal and state funding. The judges, at least most of the judges, hated it, fought it, scratched at it, and killed the drug court in Denver in 2002. It has just been reinstituted in very modified and scaled-down form in about 3 months ago, and it's a pilot program, and I want to talk about, and I want to get some feedback to the extent that you guys are willing to do it, either now live while I'm talking or afterwards, about what you think of drug courts, what you think standards ought to be, what you think some of the best and worst practices are. So that's a very general overview of why I want to talk about this subject, which is not anything I claim expertise on, except that I'm going to write the rules in conjunction with some other judges and prosecutors, and if you want to direct me on my rule writing, then you need to inform me today. Now, let me talk about how many of you, by the way, are from Colorado? How many Coloradans? So roughly a third. All right, I won't presume that you know what the history of Colorado drug courts is, and I'll take a few minutes to just talk about how it's done in Colorado. And I'm familiar with some of the other drug courts, most notably in New York, in the boroughs of New York and Miami, and I want to talk about them too, how they work, some of the problems that they've encountered, and how their working sort of frame the debate in terms of what kind of standards ought to be imposed on drug courts, assuming that you want, as a policy matter, assuming that we have to have, as a necessity, drug courts in our criminal system. In Denver, Denver had one of the very first drug courts, and as I said, it was funded by a lot of state and federal money. and it was set up in the Denver District Court. Colorado has some of the most punitive drug possession laws in the country. Possession of any controlled substance other than marijuana is in Colorado a felony, no matter how small the quantity. And until 2 years ago, it was a what we call a Class 3 felony, which carries a penalty equivalent to armed robbery and burglary. That's simple possession of any amount of drugs. For marijuana, less than an ounce, as everybody knows, is a petty offense, but it scales up pretty dramatically after that. And after two offenses, you can get back into Felonyville for marijuana. So there haven't really been any concerted efforts to decriminalize any drug possessory offenses. That the initiative that one of your speakers talked about last summer was probably the most comprehensive. It was a disappointing result in terms of the electorate, but not surprising given the lack of political will for anything that smacks of law and order. But because we have these draconian drug sentencing laws for simple possession, much like New York, where you get two strikes and you get life, and in some cases one strike and you get life, because there's no political will to take the problem on directly and decriminalize or drastically and sensibly reduce sanctions and penalties, drug courts have sprung up. And what drug courts offer in terms of carrot and stick goes like this. Many of you know this, but I think it's important to frame the discussion. In drug courts in Colorado, in New York, in Miami, and other places, Portland, where they exist and where they're well entrenched, you can get a PR bond at your first appearance if you agree to at least consider getting in the program and if you're otherwise eligible. In Colorado, that's a very rare thing because the bondsman rule the bonding process and the pretrial release process in state courts, and it's a rare day when you can get a PR bond. But if you fit the drug court criteria, you can get a PR bond at your first appearance. You've got to agree to come back in 4 days with a lawyer who has theoretically read a police report and decide whether or not 4 days later you want to get in the drug court program. So the carrot, of course, is the PR bond. The stick is that they want to get you on the train and they want to get you on the train in a hurry. You do in Colorado, as you do in every drug court that I've studied around the country, have the right to, first of all, have counsel. Public Defender's Office is staffing the Denver Drug Court with three lawyers. By contrast, there are five prosecutors and four DA investigators and 12 probation officers, but still, that's a pretty serious commitment of resources for our Colorado Public Defender for one metropolitan-based drug court. So everybody who goes through that court, indigent or not, gets a lawyer at their very first appearance, which typically happens within a day or two of arrest, if not that very day, depending on weekends and what time of the night you get popped. But you get a lawyer, and you have the right to at least see the police report, which may or may not be adequate discovery to make an informed decision about how you want to go for the rest of your life, but at least you get some discovery. 4 days later, you got to come back, assuming that you take the carrot of the PR bond and agree to consider drug court, and you got to make a decision pretty much then and there whether or not you want to go through the drug court regimen. This is pretty typical in other places. It's very typical in New York and in the very pioneering Red Hook Community Court that we've studied pretty closely. They put huge emphasis on early intervention and early decisions as to whether or not you want to take a strict criminal justice track, which in most jurisdictions, Denver included, means they just throw you out into the criminal justice system. If you don't want to be part of the drug court program, you're just in the criminal justice system. And you got to decide that within 4 or 5 days. The problem with all that, of course, is that every case is different, and some cases require some fairly serious investigation. Some cases have some fascinating potential motions to suppress and other motion work that could result in a dismissal rather than being subjected to 12, anywhere from 12 to 48 months of drug court supervision. And those are hard evaluative choices, choices which I think in some ways are unfair. And there are some systemic ways of If you reorder some of the drug court procedures, there are some systemic ways of basically softening the effect of those choices. One thing you see in Maryland, for example, but not in Colorado, is they have a dual tracking system. People can elect to take drug court, which gives them PR bonds, which gives them rehab and treatment, which gives them the prospect of the end at the end of it all of coming out with no criminal record on a deferred judgment or deferred prosecution basis. But in Maryland, you can also have another track. And this is a track that the Public Defender's Office insisted on and established and institutionalized. And that is to say that while a person is in the traditional drug court regimen, getting treatment, going to court at least once a week, doing random UAs three or four times a week, getting shock imprisonment for hot UAs, so all the things that attend a drug court kind of regime. Over here on another track, a public defender will process the case in terms of motions, and if somebody contests whether or not they're guilty or innocent, they can have a trial. Now, the conceptual problem in the adversary and constitutional system is, if I'm innocent, or if my case should be dismissed for insufficiency, biblical innocence or not, or if I got a motion to suppress that would kill my case, why should I be subjected to all of the rehab, the institutional rehab that the drug court imposes on us? It's a conundrum that really doesn't have an answer. I find the Maryland kind of precedent better and fairer than what we typically see here in Colorado and what you see in the New York metropolitan courts, which is to say you got to make a choice. You want to be treated as a criminal, traditional criminal defendant, you go outdoor A, you can't come back into the rehab and drug court regimen. You got to make a choice one way or the other. That whole two-track issue is one that we're seriously grappling with in these ABA standards. Again, in most drug courts, Colorado being an exemplar, is you've got to enter a plea after your first appearance. You can enter, depending on prosecutorial discretion, you can enter a conditional guilty plea under what we call a deferred judgment and sentencing process, and if you then satisfy the terms of your deferral and graduate from drug court, which means that you go through at least 12 months of intense probationary supervision, random UAs, inpatient treatment if necessary, intensive outpatient treatment if necessary. If you do all that stuff for 12 months at a minimum, and it can be longer if a judge decides you need more, and if you're abstinent at the end of it all, which is to say that you get at least 2 months of clean UAs, then under all of these preconditions, you end up with no criminal record. And that's the way that the Colorado and in particular Denver drug court system works. It's very intensive supervision. It has three magistrates, not judicial officers, but appointments by the chief judge of our district court, who run it. They run it for the most part after plea without the presence of defense counsel, which is another issue that I think is very problematic in terms of viewing how drug courts and their therapeutic forms of justice really function in our constitutional system. Because what happens? not just in Colorado, but in most states where there are drug courts, is that you do get involvement by a defense lawyer on the front end, evaluating the case, advising the defendant about what the program entails, what this drug court stuff is all about, advising him of the risks if they screw up, including summary jailing, and advising them in terms of the contract that they have to sign when they decide to enter the drug court system and enter a conditional plea. And the contract says you are subject to summary revocation, you are subject to summary jail, you are subject to summary banishment to in-house treatment if I, the judge, in consultation with the probation department, decide that's what should happen to you because you're not acting properly. You're either committing new offenses or you're giving dirty urines or whatever. That contract, once signed, is usually the end of the road for the criminal defense lawyer in the drug court system. Not always, but it is usually the end of the road until and unless the drug court spits the defendant out of the drug court and says, all right, we've spent 5, 10, 12 months with you or 48 months with you, and you didn't graduate because you're not abstinent, so go thee then to the criminal justice system, and because we've spent so much time with you, we consider you a real, real jerk. We think it's time to go to prison for what may have been, what may have started out as one or two mushrooms. And I don't say that flippantly. I want to relate an anecdote about a case that I handled in Weld County, and it just ended this year after some 17 years. I represented a guy named Michael Norris, who found himself driving through Greeley, Colorado, which is a relatively conservative community north of Denver. And he got stopped for speeding. He didn't have his driver's license. He was a student at the University of Colorado at the time. So because he didn't have a driver's license, they took him to the police station. They searched him, and in his pocket, he had a baggie with one mushroom. One mushroom. That spawned 17 years of litigation. He spent in drug court regimens and shock therapy and dirty UAs. He spent approximately 2.5 years of county jail time. That's just, I'll give you 5 days because you were bad. You're still bad. I'll give you 10 days. Now you get 30. Now you get 60. You haven't gotten my message. After about 2.5, really, he spent about 2.5 of his 5 years post-arrest going through these graduated sanctions. And finally the judge, a judge somewhere in the Weld County system, said, all right, I'm done with you. 8 years. 8 years in the joint. All of this because he started out in this rehabilitative system. Everybody had the best of intentions for him, but he didn't want to quit smoking dope. And so there's a happy ending, actually. After 5 years of this stuff, and after the judge said 8 years, he said, could I have a 2-week stay of execution because my mother's dying? And he split for Spain. But being a good American, he wanted to come home and be with his siblings. So 17 years after he was first busted, I walked him into the Weld County Greeley jail unannounced, said, here's your mushroom, man. He wants to make amends. And then we went through about 9 months of more due process where the district attorney decided that 8 years was probably too much, but this guy should do 4 more years in prison. And ultimately, he ended up doing no time because he had become a very skilled translator, and he translated all of the tapes in the recent Garcia Gomez murder case for the Denver district attorney, who thought that was so swell that he let him go back to Spain. That's a long, shaggy dog story. It's a long, shaggy dog story, but it illustrates a point that critics of drug courts make and make continually, and that is this. When you get into the drug court program and you keep screwing up, the judges get angrier and angrier with you. They think your failure somehow reflects on them. And if you can't, at the end of the day, graduate from drug court, and a judge has gotten really sore at you because you keep coming back and back and back and either being defiant or more typically into avoidance about whether or not you want to continue to use, judges throw you away. Statistics show, very interesting statistics that were compiled by a Denver district judge who I respect a lot named Morris Hoffman, who opposes drug courts. He said that in the 8 years that Denver had a drug court, at least 100% more people went to prison per year than pre-drug court. He and a lot of other people documented a 300% increase in the number of arrests for very small-time drug possession offenses and, you know, nickel-dime bag transactions. Because the cops now had some place to throw people who wouldn't otherwise get processed, would just sort of be flushed through the system. And it's a statistic that has repeated itself in New York and other places where drug courts have sprung up. The number of arrests for relatively minor drug offenses increases exponentially. So, in some ways, be careful what you ask for. The public defenders in most states, in my state included, buy into the drug court system for a simple reason, and it's an expedient one, and it's one that I understand, and I think I buy into it, too, with qualifications. And that is that until, Alan, you change the drug laws, you've got to be able to ameliorate some of the worst consequences of the kind of draconian sentencing statutes we have in this state, where, again, possession of everything but marijuana is a felony, no matter how little. So they buy into it for that reason. They buy into it because it's so much more rational bond than we normally have in this state. And they buy into it for some people. Because some people really want and need treatment. And the resources that these drug courts get are amazing compared to the traditional resources you see in most criminal justice systems, certainly in Colorado, certainly in New York, certainly, I think, across the country. And you get resourced to death. You've got social workers. You've got mental health workers. You've got the availability for inpatient and outpatient, not just drug treatment, but mental health treatment, because these drug court personnel are well-trained, and they understand that drugs sort of per se isn't a problem. Typically, there are a lot of other underlying things that need treatment. So for a lot of people, being in the system makes a lot of sense. And in the lawyer's mind, the most rational outcome is if you make it through the system and you graduate and you're abstinent, whatever that means. I've been abstinent, unfortunately, too much of my life.
Sorry to hear that.
Abstinence makes the heart grow fonder. But if you graduate through some form of chemically recognized abstinence, you end up with no criminal record. That's the biggest carrot. And we had the unfortunate occasion in this state of having the governor just last week veto a bill that passed with broad bipartisan support that would allow people with felony convictions who hadn't had any trouble for 10 years to have their records sealed, which would in turn allow them to say that they didn't have criminal convictions, which would in turn allow them to be in professions and get public housing and things like that. The governor vetoed that. And so the carrot of being rid of a criminal conviction is a pretty strong carrot. So I think my worldview is that these drug courts are part of our at least contemporary political reality, and until you all get the job done. And then the question is, and this is the question that I'm looping back to in terms of standards, what kinds of limitations and what kind of rules should there be imposed uniformly on drug courts so that they don't go too far? Did everybody hear the question? It's a really good question, and it's one that we are hotly debating. The question is this. If you want to impose some rationality on the system, and my 17-year-old mushroom case as an example, why can't there be some sort of embedded rule that there is a maximum amount of time and pain that can be imposed on somebody who fails the drug court system? Is that is
exactly
that,
you know, yeah.
That's the question. I agree with you totally, and much as I hate sentencing guidelines, I think there would be ways of structuring guidelines for drug offenses to achieve that end. Prosecutors and to a lesser extent judges hate this and really oppose it. Prosecutors take the view, and we've been debating this in the ABA Standards Committee, prosecutors take the view that you're limiting our discretion and you're limiting a judge's discretion if you impose some sort of rational limit on what happens to somebody who fails drug court. And that's the debate.
But a five-year statute limits their discretion anyway. If somebody is sent to jail for more than 5 years, that's limiting their discretion.
That's true, but you shouldn't have to do 5 years.
No, but I mean the system is
for one mushroom.
The statutory penalties.
Yeah,
statutory
I understand. But
this just has a maximum statutory penalty of 30 days or 50 days.
It's a great issue. It's a difficult issue because our statutory penalties are so insane. 16 years for any possessory offenses is a theoretical possibility in this state.
That was criminal defense attorney Hal Haddon in Aspen, Colorado, giving that presentation and answering a few questions at the Normal Aspen Legal Seminars, the second annual. Normal is a long-running legal seminar that takes place in Key West, Florida. You can sign up for that right now. We have links to it right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. We're going to have a special page with more of the presentations that took place out in Aspen, Colorado. Look for that in the next couple of weeks. And again, a very important show here on the Audio Stash tomorrow dealing with a brand new clinical trial dealing with smoked marijuana. Make sure to tune in every day right here to Normal's Daily Audio Stash podcast, your first and best source for marijuana information. We're going to round out today's Wednesday show with this great track that I played a couple of weeks ago here on the program, but messed up the voiceover for. The group is called Zion Eye. The track is called Temperature. It features one of my favorite hip-hop artists of all time, Talib Kweli. Great track here today from the Independent Online Distribution Alliance. We have links to Zion Eye up on our website at normalaudiostash.com.
Where I stay is getting hot now. Unemployment is high and buildings is getting chopped down. Gold teeth populating the blocks. Slim and slang day and night on the lookout for cops. Make a shot ring out like the Liberty Bell. No escape from the heat, it's getting hotter than hell. Like the ovens on broil with blood stains on the soil. Pants donning the colors of Crown Royal. And little sister got a baby on hip. And her mama never home, so the cycle is sick. Young ballers on the court wanna play in the league. But got knocked in the spot for a quarter of weed. It's getting hot in here. Baby, leave on your clothes. Much more to live in life than emulating them hoes. I try to speak truth in the form of my flow. But the temperature is rising, it's harder to grow. To show,
gotta keep my head up.
Yeah,
even though I'm fed up.
Survival every day.
It's getting hard to eat.
sleeping, rest in peace, headquarters, tunnel vision. Most of us is rushing like a special order of stolen Naya. Block is hot to get it on fire with more narc sales than having Barksdale from that shoulder wire. We keep growing like hair when you die. Black butterfly on the rose that's preparing to fly. I paint a picture in the color of the orchid is vivid. Whatever kid I'm talking, I spit it, I walk it, I live it. God bless my every step. I need to go through a reverend. Your boy Houston got my eye out just to get into heaven. We live between heaven and hell like John Constantine, doing crimes and confessing like a teenage drama queen. We was leaning, now we're falling down like Michael Douglas. I spit it fast, I gotta get it out. They might have plugged us and try to drug us. So I stay aware and watch out for the setup. Never scared to go head up. Got a plan to get my bread up, man.
Gotta keep my head up.
Yeah.
Even though I'm fed up.
Survival every day.
It's getting hard to eat.
Right.
And all the drama in the street.
It's getting hot in every way.
Gotta keep my head up.
Yeah.
Even though I'm fed up.
Survival every day.
It's getting hard to eat.
Right.
And all the drama in the street.
It's getting hot in every way.
Here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash today, that track Temperature featuring Talib Kweli, one of the best hip-hop artists this nation has ever produced by far. We have links to Zion Eye up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.